Worldview Radio and WVW-TV is made possible because of listeners like you. Thank you so much for your tax-deductible contribution that you can make at WVWFoundation.com. That's WVWFoundation.com or by calling 901-825-0652. That's 901-825-0652. You can also send your tax-deductible contribution via check to WVW Foundation, P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee 38027. That's again, WVW Foundation, P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee 38027. Thank you for helping make possible Worldview Radio and WVW-TV broadcasts.
Brennan House Live. Whether the issue is law, science, economics, history, family, social issues, education, religion, government, or national security, Brennan brings the issues of the day into clear focus through the lens of a Judeo-Christian worldview. And now, here is your host, Brennan House.
Good evening. Welcome to the broadcast. Glad you are with us. Tonight, my guest will be Don Brown, part two, with Don Brown on Extortion 17, the helicopter that was shot down with some 31 American souls on board, including 17 Navy SEALs in August of 2011. Were they targeted? Why was our government not allowing, them to be waved off? Even though people were warning, it looks like there might be terrorists on the ground with cylinders that could be used, our shoulder rocket launch systems to knock down that helicopter. What was going on? Why was the government involved in a cover-up? So many questions yet unanswered. We'll get into part two tonight live with Don Brown. Later, I will be joined by Karen Kingston. New information from Karen Kingston, the former Pfizer employee. And then, folks, Dr. Carrie Madej. Dr. Carrie Madej. About 2 weeks ago, she was involved in a near-fatal one-engine Cessna plane crash. Thankfully, she survived. And you'll hear from Dr. Carrie Madej tonight. Of course, as we're coming on the air, many are asking what happened in Illinois. The media is trying to blame this on a pro-Trump individual, someone that was seen at a Trump rally. What most of the media knows to be true, but they are complicit in their lies and propaganda, is that this individual dressed up as Waldo, as in Where's Waldo, seemed to be mocking the president. He is not a Trump supporter. If you go to worldviewreport.com tonight, that's worldviewreport.com, you'll see that we have linked to this article right here. Uncovered overnight shows Highland Park shooter Bobby Crimo, is tied to socialist, progressive, Antifa, and the occult. Article by Joe Hoft of the Gateway Pundit. Police arrested this guy, age 22, yesterday for the shooting in Highland Park, Illinois. Killed 6, injured over 20 at the 4th of July parade in Highland Park, Illinois. On Tuesday, Gateway Pundit uncovered information indicating that Crimo is a radical progressive with ties to Antifa, progressive groups, and the occult. Looking over information that was collected following the deadly shooting, it's evident that Highland Park 4th of July parade killer, reportedly to be Bobby Crimo, has a very dark background. We reported the shooter yesterday when he's confirmed as a person of interest. So here's what they went on to say as they dug through his social media. He has ties to the Democratic Socialist of America, as noted by the tattoo on his neck. This is the largest and fastest growing socialist organization in America. Seems as though what he's got going on there has something to do with some of these images here as well. And they go on to show you several of his social media posts. He also has ties to Antifa. In one picture on social media, he shares his dark Antifa outfit. Throughout his social media posts, he shares Antifa and progressive symbolism and symbology. We see here the A and some of these other slogans or signs. Evidence reveals he's not a Trump supporter. He makes fun of Trump and follows and his followers in his social media posts. He attended a Trump event dressed up as Where's Waldo. This appears to be sarcasm and an attack on President 45, who may also be President 47. His social media posts appear as if he wants to kill President 47. This is all really odd stuff, isn't it? Photographed at a Trump rally in Chicago, suburb Northbrook, in September 2020, dressed as the character from Where's Waldo. So what else we got? He's also very dark. He uses an icon throughout his social media. This icon is from, quote, mystic set with magic circles, pentagrams, and imagery, chakra symbols. Collection of icons with witchcraft and occult handwriting letters. He shares the icon throughout his media posts. Keep seeing this, right? Below is the overall profile of this guy. And again, you guys can make your own assessment, but it seems as though he is indeed pushing Antifa and, of course, Democratic Socialist of America, DSA. So where is the media on this? Why are they not telling you the truth about this? Because they're too busy trying to say this is a Trump supporter. And by the way, as I discussed on my radio show today from 1 to 2 p.m. Central Time with Mike Hammond of Gun Owners of America, you got some of the strictest, if not the strictest, gun laws in America coming out of the state of Illinois. Let's not forget the last several governors have gone to prison. Let's not forget this is where Chicago is, that have nightly killings due to all the criminals that have guns. One of the strictest gun control states in the union, yet the crime in one of the biggest cities in America, Chicago, is out of control. This guy supposedly got these guns legally. They have red flag laws. They have everything. He was on the radar of the police, according to numerous reports. Reading reports tonight that some folks had reported that he was threatening to kill, quote, everybody, end quote. So much for red flag laws. I guess that only applies to people who are Trump supporters, conservatives, constitutionalists. These red flag laws will only be used to disarm, for the most part, enemies of the revolutionaries, not the revolutionaries. So, my friends, where are you going to hear this tonight if not here? I doubt you heard this on NBC Nightly News, ABC, or CBS, much less CNN. And I bet probably not Fox. Joining me now is Don Brown, himself a decorated veteran of the U.S. military, and an author of a book about Extortion 17, the name of the helicopter shot down in August of 2011 with, I think, 31 souls on board, 17 U.S. Navy SEALs. One of those included Aaron Vaughn, the son of my friend Billy, and his wife Karen Vaughn. We have done extensive interviews with the Vaughn over the years, and this is featured heavily in my documentary, Sabotage. You can watch an hour for free at sabotagethemovie.com and see some of it even in the 1 hour for free, sabotagethemovie.com. You might want to get a pen and paper. I'm going to give you a couple websites tonight to go to, at least one where you can watch a movie. I did watch the trailer. I've been endeavoring to watch the whole film, but I haven't had a chance yet, but I did watch the trailer. In fact, before we go to Don, let's roll this trailer. You'll find our guest tonight, Don, in this trailer, but we'll also want to tell you about his book. Again, we only scratched the surface the other night. I want to get to more with Don. Let's go to the trailer, though.
We understand that a plane has crashed into...
The people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
Osama bin Laden claiming credit for the 9/11 attacks.
The biggest and most costly manhunt in U.S. history is building to a crescendo.
The United States killed Osama bin Laden.
Sources say an elite division of the Navy SEALs carried out the operation. There are reports surfacing that Al-Qaeda has placed a $50,000 bounty on the heads of any U.S. Navy SEALs, dead or alive.
Dude, I think they just got shot.
Nobody's going to survive that. There's nobody in that.
This is the single largest loss of life in Afghanistan in a single incident.
Most of them are U.S. Navy SEALs.
My job was to protect, and that night, I wasn't able to do that.
This flight should have been 10 minutes from wheels up to wheels down, but we lost communication with it.
We've had two U.S. Army pilots verify that a black box was installed on Extortion 17.
One of the more sensational stories is that the black box was washed away in a flash flood. Was there a black box?
No, sir.
So without a doubt, that black box was installed.
We discovered bullets in the bodies of the Navy SEALs. The military threw them away.
More likely than not, that supports a shootout on board.
Some of the families were told that the bodies were not identifiable. That is absolutely not the case.
And in fact, their sons were cremated.
I called the command. I said, why'd you cremate my son? My son didn't want to be cremated.
Every American should be taught about what happened in Extortion 17.
The families want to know the why. We owe that to them.
The tragedy is the caliber of men that were lost.
What we do know is that it is clear that someone wanted the truth out.
Anybody out there, we have a fallen angel. A fallen angel. Roger.
Yeah, that's on my watch list. Logan, can you also make sure I have audio on my computer, or I can just send you the link to a vid? Why don't you send you the link? Because I have another video, Logan, that I want to play tonight real quick before we bring on my next guest. Well, in fact, let me go ahead and bring him on. Play this, Logan. I'm going to send that to you. This is a video of Billy and Karen Vaughn. Their son, Aaron Vaughn, was on that helicopter, Extortion 17. And he's also very, very good friends with, they're very good friends with Don. In fact, I think Don was with them recently. Don, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us for part two.
And thanks for having me back. Thanks for playing the trailer. And I'm actually in Billy and Karen's home tonight. I spent the 4th of July with them. Be here for a couple more days. So they speak highly of you. And we're very, very grateful for what you're doing to help us get the truth out.
Well, thank
with
you.
This extortion tragedy.
Well, thank you. And please greet them for me. Logan, let me know when we have that next clip. This is a clip of Billy and Karen Vaughn in our studio. In fact, while they were in our studio filming the series of TV shows, they interviewed you, Don. That's when I first found out about you. So folks can find it. What is the name of your book on Extortion 17? It's got Extortion 17 in the title.
Yep. The book is Extortion 17, The Shootdown of SEAL Team 6. It's the green book. This is the book that really begins to uncover the cover-up. Another one has been written, published by the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum, which basically tracks the government's cover-up. This exposes the cover-up. Extortion 17, The Shootdown of SEAL Team 6. And, of course, the movie just played, the docudrama, is Fallen Angel, Extortion 17. So I encourage everybody to read the book and to watch the film and then try to get the word out as much as we can.
Let's go back to a few bullet points in our last show, part one, from from Friday night. So they could have been waved off. We see the young lady being interviewed that was in that aircraft, that plane circling with all of the ability to see on the ground, the infrared. It looks like a terrorist on the ground with cylinders. It could then just be, you know, like a rocket launch something, shoulder-launched rockets to shoot those things down. She wants to call them off, wave them off, even provide ground support. I suppose they have guns on them. They could fire the ground and dealt with this. They're all denied this. Do you believe, do the families believe, do some of them believe that this was a setup, that this was deliberately to take down SEAL Team 6 because Joe Biden had leaked that SEAL Team 6 was behind the killing of Osama bin Laden?
Well, you know, Brandon, I cannot speak for all the families, but I can say this, and I said this before, that this was either deliberate, it was a deliberate attempt to take these guys out, or it was criminal negligence. So take your pick. Either criminal negligence, this mission was flown, or a deliberate attempt to take them out. And I have my opinion, and there's not a good answer to it either way.
Okay, if I ask you...
You know, when you... Go
If I ask you a question you don't want to answer, just say so, okay?
All right, I'll do the best I can. I'll see if I can bite my tongue if I need to.
Okay.
I'll do that, you bet.
Do you know what the mission was that night? What was the real mission? Where they were going, was that the primary mission that night, true or false?
I do not believe that the mission they claimed that they were on, at least the mission the military claimed they're on to take out Kareem Tahir, is a credible explanation as to why they were flying. I gave this talk on this shoot down to a Republican group in Western North Carolina about 4 years ago. And at the end of the group, at the end of the talk, I was approached by a gentleman named who was the first CIA station commander in Afghanistan in 2001. And the colonel told me that something I didn't even know when I wrote the book, that in 2001, the CIA took operational control of SEAL Team 6. Didn't even know that.
Let's stop right there. The CIA took operational control of SEAL Team 6.
At the beginning of 2001, correct. That is absolutely correct. And was engaged actively in operational control of it all throughout the Afghan war. I did not know this. The colonel's name is Colonel Pete McElwain. You know, track him down. And of course, I checked him out after we talked. But I gave a PowerPoint on the extortion shootdown. And you see, if you read the official military transcript, they will say that the SEAL team was going after a mid-level Taliban operative named Kareem Tahir. And I was sharing that with the group, what the military had said. Afterwards, Colonel McElwain came to me and introduced himself and said, I was the very first station chief in CIA. Colonel McElwain had been Army intelligence. They moved over to the CIA to establish the initial station on the ground there in Kabul. And of course, he left about 2003, so he was not active at the time of the shootdown. He said, number one, CIA took operational control of SEAL Team 6, 2001. I verified that. That's correct. I didn't know when I wrote the book. There are several things that have come to light since I wrote the book. Number two, he said that the mission that is described is not credible because the explanation is that they were going after a mid-level Taliban operative. You would not send SEAL Team 6 after a mid-level Taliban operative. In fact, this Kareem Tahir was killed about 2 to 3 weeks later with a missile from an F-15. He was taken out by a missile from the air. Nobody ever gave a credible explanation as to why you take him out with a drone or a missile. I mean, that question had been asked by some of the family members, and General Colt said, well, wounded when the hearts and the minds, which is just gobbledygook gibberish. So this Taliban operative was taken out by a missile and an F-15. There is no credible explanation as to why this mission was flown. None. And so we don't have a real answer to that question as of yet. Sam, we get a little video issue there. Hopefully it'll clear up. We don't have an answer to that question yet, Brandon. And hopefully we will get an answer. That's one of the things we're searching for. There's something that just is not adding up from all this.
Well, how often do you put – now, there are 31 souls on that helicopter, right? American souls.
30 plus the military working dog. Correct. Exactly.
So 31 American souls mm-hmm. on that. And of those, 17 were Navy SEALs. The other were support staff, correct?
Correct. 17 Navy SEALs, 5 U.S. Navy support staff. You had 3 U.S. Air Force pararescue types who were special forces in the Air Force. And the other 5 were members of the Army National Guard flight crew.
Now, it's a small world, but I had a gentleman, former military gentleman, come to one of my 2-day trainings I did a few years ago before I knew the Vaughns, and one of his close relatives was one of the pilots of that helicopter.
Right.
And
Mm-hmm.
And so what a small world. And so he's telling me about this, and then a few years later I meet the Vaughns. So are we to believe that this was just an Afghan farmer who just got himself some shoulder-launched rockets and just happened to get lucky?
One of the things that we learned, Brandon, is that this did not come from the military's investigation, but both the British and the French press reported that, first of all, the shootdown was announced by Hamid Karzai, not by the United States. Then that morning, both the British and French press released information that, according to sources inside the Karzai government, the Taliban knew exactly the flight plan, knew exactly what the flight plan was. Our government did not touch that. The Colt report did not touch that. This was a setup someone gave information to whoever was on the ground, assuming the shoot down was.
How do we know Joe Biden? How do we know Joe Biden didn't give this information? How do we know that Joe Biden and his family didn't take a pile of cash in a suitcase for this information?
Joe Biden, of course, had set the SEAL team up because 3 days after the Operation Neptune Spear, the Bin Laden mission, on May the 3rd, we talked about this earlier, May the 3rd, 2011, this shoot down was in August. Joe Biden outed Navy SEALs as the group that took Bin Laden out. And as you pointed out in our last interview, this put a target on their backs. The SEAL teams were calling their family members and saying, get off social media. Aaron Vaughn called Billy and Karen, told the same thing, and others did as well. Joe Biden acted in a criminally irresponsible manner on that night of May 3rd. When
he should have been impeached. He should have been impeached as Vice President of the United States and criminally charged.
Well, and I think there's some charges that might be brought by virtue of the fact that he turns over $7 billion worth of military equipment to the enemy as well. What do you think about that?
Yeah, which also happens to be the Taliban. So this guy's been in a partnership or at least has some soft feelings toward the Taliban. And now you're telling me tonight, because of what was going on in Afghanistan, the Taliban knew the flight pattern of Extortion 17. How interesting.
What I'm telling you is the French and British press reported that. And I can say also that when you read the report from the cult report was the official military report. It was about 14 pages. We discovered another 1,250 pages of evidence that contradicted largely that cult report. But when you read the cult report itself, it says nothing about what the British and French reported. And there's no question. First of all, it's dark out there. It's black. Somebody knew where that chopper was flying. And we don't know why it was hanging in the air for almost 10 minutes before it was shot down.
Let's stop right there. You're saying Extortion 17 was just hanging in midair for 10 minutes.
Close to that. Let me be more precise. Let's be precise on this. The chopper took off at 2:22 a.m., okay? It was supposed to be on the ground at 2:32 a.m. Now, keep in mind, this is in the morning, this is local time. You got to get that chopper up, you got to get it down, and you got to get it down as quickly as possible because it's making a lot of noise in the night. Even though there was a moonless night, the Taliban had access to night vision goggles, so you don't want it hanging in the air. So the chopper was actually shot down, to be precise, at 2:39, almost 2:40 a.m. So it was technically about 8 minutes over hanging in the air before at the time it blew up. And hit the deck. The military report says it was flying about 100 feet over the deck or 100 feet off the ground at the time that it was shot down. The official military report says that an RPG-7, which is a Russian-made RPG, shot it with three different shots. One clipped the back rotor and took it out. It's possible. We also believe there might have been a firefight on the chopper. Something went wrong inside the chopper. There was a delay in landing. And we lost communication with the chopper. We couldn't get it. We couldn't raise it. And there was a final communication, extortion, 1 minute, and then a minute later the chopper blew up. Never landed as it should have. It was hanging mysteriously in the air for precisely about 8 minutes. And we don't really know why. But we do know that if we had a black box and if there were a voice data recorder, as there should have been, as most of these choppers were armed with, they had these black boxes with flight data recorders and voice data recorders. We recovered that. We know exactly what happened. But that black box mysteriously disappeared.
So let me make clear, the black box disappeared. We are told there's no black box. At one point where the government lies to us, oh, there was no black box. There was clearly a black box. People will testify to that in the documentary. Then we have, it was washed away by rain. Well, first of all, there's not enough rain, I don't think, in that region to wash that thing away. Plus, isn't there also some device on it, tracking device? We pull these things out of the bottom of oceans. So then we also have some black op type group. Ah, you mean the CIA is now over controlling SEAL Team 6, we just found out tonight with this part two interview with Don Brown. Some black op group comes in, lands, and maybe they pick up the black box and they take off. So there was a helicopter that landed before the real rescue group came in there, right?
Well, not a helicopter. Let me be precise, if I may. First off, yes, the CIA had taken operation control of SEAL Team 6. Secondly, here's a point that you might not have picked up on random, but I'll share it with you anyway. You talked about Captain Johnny Marquez, the AC-130, circling overhead. One, they requested permission to take out Taliban moving toward a landing site. Permission denied. Two, they said, we'll turn the SEAL team around. There's no reason to fly it there. It's dangerous. Permission denied. But here's the other thing. About 10 minutes before the chopper was actually shot down, that AC-130 was ordered to break off surveillance of the chopper, and it was replaced by an unidentified, top-secret civilian aircraft that watched the chopper going to get shot down.
Well, that's so probably military, CIA. So the CIA probably was sitting there watching the whole thing.
Well, I mean, I'm telling you what we've discovered, and you know, and you can put two and two together on it. I don't know that it was a CIA plane, but you put two together. We know that a top secret civilian aircraft took control of the airspace shortly before, within minutes before it shot down. After it was shot down, the AC-130 resumes surveillance. So they said, get out of the way. Then the chopper was shot down. Okay. Now, on the situation with the ground, let me set the time for you.
Let me just ask you, is there any chance our own government shot it down? So friendly fire?
I'll say this too. I'll tell you exactly what I told Billy yesterday. Before I got involved in this case, before I got involved in working on this book and writing this book and studying the military report, I would never have believed that would happen. Now I'll tell you, nothing would surprise me.
So you're telling me, as the author of Extortion 17, as an attorney, were you a JAG attorney?
Yes.
Okay. So as
16-year
JAG attorney with the U.S. Navy. Veteran, patriot,
right.
You're telling me it is not out of the realm of possibility. You don't have evidence of such, but it's not out of the realm of possibility that our own government, with whoever this plane was, came in, moved the military plane out of the way, came in. It's not out of the realm of possibility this was shot down by our own military.
Anything is possible. I don't want to believe that, but I don't want to believe that at all. But we don't have the answers that we need.
And we don't have the answers because the government's right. Stonewalling and lying. So the reason we have to ask these
right.
questions is because our government has a long pattern of lying. Our government has a long pattern now of working against the patriots, working against the warfighters, working against these hardcore, well-trained, patriotic men who risk it all. They have a wife and children at home. They risk it all. They put their life on the line over and over, and they keep getting thrown under the bus. And in some cases, maybe they get terminated when they become a political football. I don't know. But we have a long history. When your government, and this is my belief, when your government turns a blind eye to who murdered the sitting president of the United States, the commander-in-chief, John F. Kennedy, don't think they can't get away with whatever they want after that.
There's nothing that would surprise me. I served in the military. My son's in the military. The working rank and file members of the United States military, you know, are patriots who would give their life for their country. But we're talking about people at the very top of the military working with certain governmental agencies, and there's nothing that would surprise me. Now,
do you fear for your own safety for all you've been doing and saying and uncovering?
No.
Why not?
Because Jesus said, "Fear not, for I'm with you." You know, and I'm not. You know, once you give in to fear, they won. So I have a maker that's bigger than they are, and he can take me tomorrow, take me the next day, let me stay here another 50 years, what he wants to do. But once we get over fear and worrying about what they're going to say, worrying what they're going to do, it's a kind of a liberating thing. Now, I don't mean to be boastful about that. I mean, you know, something could happen that I might change the way I feel about it. But, you know, someone has to speak the truth. And, you know, I've taken an oath to the Constitution. I've been willing to give my life for my country. And
so your oath hasn't expired. Is that what you're telling me?
Never. That is exactly correct.
Now, is there any truth that some helicopter or something set down, or some group came in there and maybe removed the black box before the rescue group came in? Help me get the facts straight on that.
Okay, so the chopper goes down at 2:39 a.m., okay? If you read the official COPE report, the official report, it will tell you that at 4:12 a.m., U.S. Army Rangers arrived on the scene. We don't have any reason to doubt that. And at 4:14 a.m., U.S. Army Pathfinders came in and set down the chopper. So 412, 414 is what the official report will say to you. What we discovered as we were digging through the evidence, and we've got this in several places now, we first discovered in the official chronology, about 45 minutes or so after that chopper went down, there is a notation in the chronology. It's called Enclosure H, which says that unidentified coalition forces enter the area of the shoot down, survey the aircraft, and leave on an unidentified road. That is the first major red flag that we saw. That is not reported in the official report. We found that in the chronology buried deep within the 1,250 pages. We found a second reference to the same thing. And then we were able to uncover the actual air traffic control audio of two Apache helicopters who were hovering overhead. As I mentioned to you, Brandon, when you finally get a chance to watch this film, Fallen Angel, you will see actual video footage of the burning helicopter. You will see our men laying on the ground, our SEALs laying on the ground. You'll see that with your own eyes.
How did you get that? How did you get that?
You said earlier that if I didn't want to answer a question, I wouldn't have to. So
okay.
But
all right.
But it came from sources in the U.S. military. I'll tell
okay.
you.
Okay.
I'll tell you who got the. I don't even say I had it, but I'll tell you the producers. Okay.
So just to make clear, we got white hats, we got patriots, we got whistleblowers all over this government, and we need more of them. But keep going.
We did, right? So anyway, on that video, there is audio conversation between two Apache pilots. When this chopper went in, it had two Apache helicopters flying alongside it. They were told they could not engage in pre-suppression fire. In addition to that, they had the AC-130 gunship. So the two Apache choppers stayed over the area for about an hour watching. And we have heard audio recordings between the two Apache helicopter pilots saying, what happened to those friendlies down there? And there's one question, what happened to those friendlies down there? About the same time that on the chronology showing an unidentified coalition force coming into the landing zone, remember we saw that on paper. Now we have audio recording of two Apache pilots talking about it. One says, what happened to those friendlies that were down there? And then he follows up, if you don't want to talk about it, I understand. The second pilot responds, or worse to this effect, the friendlies are no longer there. So they're talking about, they call them quote-unquote friendlies. Remember, the chronology, Enclosure H, called them unidentified coalition forces. We don't know what that means. We don't know if that means U.S. military, Afghan military, British military. We don't know if it means an American civilian agency. We don't know. Coalition force, whatever that means, on the ground, about 45 minutes later. And they stayed around, they surveyed the area, and hauled Boogie out of there. So let me ask this question. Why would a friendly force, a coalition force, come in? You've got American bodies on the ground. You've got the chopper burning. You know, there's a need to secure the area. The Rangers are still 30 minutes away or so. Why would you come in there, survey the aircraft, and leave?
Steal the black box. Yeah. To steal the black box is my opinion or thought or theory. But I would make clear, did the friendlies come in on a helicopter or they come in by road?
The information that we have, and this is even more significant in my opinion, is they came in by foot, which tells me they knew.
They knew what was going to happen.
Bingo. Bingo. I mean, what are the chances that a friendly coalition force would be there and within 40 minutes or so arrive on foot, survey the area, leave? The official military report does not mention that at all. We have helicopter pilots talking about it over here. We can hear them talking about it. And why would they do that?
But how would the pilots in the air know that there were friendlies on the ground? How would they know that?
Well, you're asking me to speculate to a degree, but I would imagine that they could see in some way that they were friendlies. I don't know if they were able to identify them visually through binoculars. I don't know. I don't really know the answer to that question. But we do know that they're identified as friendlies by the pilots. They're also identified as friendlies separately from the pilots, again, in a document that we discovered, Enclosure H, which is the chronology of the shootdown. In fact, multiple places in that document we discovered, which have been declassified. And again, that's one of the biggest mysteries here, how this report became declassified in a matter of weeks, because like you said, there are people within the military. They're good people. They're good people in the United States government. They're good people in the United States military. And I don't want that to be lost on anybody. But there are some who are just as crooked as the day is long, and it would stop at nothing. But there are people who wanted the truth out, as we've said. And so you know, I don't know how the Apache choppers knew that, but we know they were friendlies. If they'd not been friendlies, they would probably have been taken out, okay? Because the Apache choppers were standing by and were under instruction to take out Taliban entering the crash zone. So the choppers are watching these guys on the ground. And somehow, they know they're friendlies. I don't know the answer to that question. But as you pointed out, the fact they were on the scene, Johnny on the spot, by foot. Now, I mean, is it possible that they landed somewhere, you know, within a half mile away and walked? I don't know the answer to that question, but they came into the scene by foot and left on an unidentified road. And again, were not mentioned in the official report.
And who would have told the pilot to hang in the air of Extortion 17, the pilot, who would have told him, if anyone, to hang in the air for 10 minutes? Is that normal protocol, to hang in the air like that with that many bodies on board?
Well, there were 8 minutes over, so I do want to be precise. But again, if we had the black box and the cockpit voice recorder, we would know the answer to that.
All right.
Now, we do know, we know also, Raymond, and you may know, that there were... we first discovered there were 7 unidentified Afghans that jumped on this flight. And I think I may have mentioned when we talked earlier, we were flying these missions, our most prestigious and best trained military warriors in the world.
And let me make something real clear here. And that is, correct me if I'm wrong, but when the helicopter's on the ground and the SEAL Team 6 comes on, they get on the plane on the aircraft on one side. The Afghan special forces would have come from another side, and they get on board, and they're all masked up, and everybody's wearing their gear, and they would not have known, correct me if I'm wrong, if those were the same Afghan special forces they've always been flying with or not, because they're all masked up and ready to go and coming in from a different direction, get on and go to the back of the plane. They wouldn't know that they were new guys or guys that had been switched out, true or false.
I cannot say for sure because it wasn't there, but I can give you some additional information you might not have. We had U.S. Army Rangers who were on the ground tell us that there had been a switch out, and the switch out occurred because, you see, the Army Rangers had Afghan National Army assigned to them. SEAL Team 6 had Afghan National Army. The Afghans assigned to SEAL Team 6 became extremely angry with SEAL Team 6, apparently because there was a dispute as to SEAL Team 6 taking out some people they should not have taken out. So these Afghan National Army units who could have been infiltrated by Taliban are angry with SEAL Team 6, and so they are so angry that the Afghans who were assigned to the Rangers jumped on board SEAL Extortion 17, and so there was a swap, clearly a swap that was not put on a manifest. All these Afghans lived together. So the idea that, in other words, they were stationed together there on the base, the idea that the Afghans who normally were the SEAL team, extremely angry with the SEAL team, they swap out and their colleagues who they're living with swap in, you think that that anger is not going to carry over to the other team.
So how do we know then, due to the bullet wounds in the body of the SEAL team that were later, we're told, discarded during autopsy, which is a crime, destruction of evidence and a crime gene. Someone should go to jail, prison for that. How do we know that we didn't have a firefight breakout? And one reason they covered the black box is because that would be detrimental to the U.S. government and our relationship with Afghan's government, because their Afghan special forces just murdered a bunch of our SEAL Team 6 in midair.
Well, we do not know that.
And by the way, if they're Islamist and they die in jihad, they get guaranteed nirvana.
And that's something. Listen, we don't know that there wasn't a firefight. As a matter of fact, we did discover bodies, bullets in several of the bodies of Navy SEALs. They were called cook-off rounds, which is BS, to be honest with you.
Because if you take a handful of bullets and throw it in a fire, their tests have been done, according to Billy Vaughn, that you don't end up with enough projectile power that would even cut a piece of cardboard.
We covered that extensively in my book. The U.S. Army, at the end of World War II, at the request of several major metropolitan fire departments, did multiple studies on cook-off rounds and published the studies to fire departments, and they're correct. If you take a box of, you know, 30-30, 30-06, you know, 22-9 millimeter, you put them in your fireplace, one, it probably will, nothing will happen. But two, if it does get hot enough for those bullets to go off, you and I, Brandon, are probably both old enough to remember the old cereal box snap crackle pop. Was that Tony the Tiger? Or was Rice Krispies snap crackle pop?
That's Rice Krispies, yeah.
Rice Krispies. That's what you get, you know, with cook-off rounds, actually cook-off snap crackle pop. If a bullet is in the gun and it goes off, the only way for it to penetrate the body is that gun is directed straight at the victim. It's almost impossible for this to have happened. But the broader point is, as you point out, military protocol requires all the evidence to be preserved until at least the investigation is over. These bullets were thrown away immediately before the investigation ever closed. There should have been a court-martial because of that. Nobody said a word about it. When Billy and I went to Washington, we tried to get some answers, and the late Walter Jones and Congressman Mac Thornberry were asking questions to the Pentagon as to why that happened. The Pentagon blew them off, never gave a straight answer as to who did that or why they did that, who authorized them to throw the bullets away. But so we did not recover bullets. You see, if you recover bullets, it could be, you know, an AR-type round from an M4 or an M16, or it could be a Soviet, you know, type of bullet from an ASK or from a, you know, AK-47 type rifle. We don't know what the caliber were because they were thrown away. And you can't discover the cook-off rounds anyway, because you can't. You know, we have a ballistics expert named Don Miko, who is interviewed as part of the docudrama, and he explains that it would have been possible for a visual examination of the bullet by the military pathologist to have determined it was a cook-off round anyway. That obviously was planted. They figured most people wouldn't even question it. But we did question it. So we know they're lying about that too. Because you asked me if I thought somebody from a military could have done this. I know this much. We've had multiple lies from inside the military to cover this thing up big time. One lie right after the other. One inconsistency after throwing away the bullets to the bodies before the investigation's closed. You know, inconsistent stories on the black box. First, General Colt said it washed away in a flood, which is a bunch of bull, as you pointed out, because they've got ping. You know, first of all, there was no flood that could have washed it away. They couldn't have found it. We had total control over the space. All you got to do is follow the low-frequency ping. General Colt did not tell the family members there was never a black box. They stuck with that story for a year and a half before they had a dog and pony show hearing by Congressman Jacob Chaffetz in February of 2014. Jacob asked the military, Gary Reed, who was the deputy secretary for defense for low intensity conflict, what happened to the black box. At that point, a year and a half later, the military said, well, there was never one to begin with. The chopper was too old. When that happened, the phone started ringing. People were calling Billy Vaughn. I've had military helicopter pilots say it's a bunch of BS. And during when the film was shot, we uncovered two U.S. Army pilots who had not only flown CH-47s, but flew that very chopper. In fact, one of them flew that very chopper in Afghanistan approximately 48 hours before it shot down. Both of these U.S. Army pilots said it did have a black box. They're lying, they're you-know-what's off. So they're lying, they're covering something up. That's why nothing about this would surprise me. When you asked the question earlier, was it an inside job? Could very well have been. It would have been surely a tremendous political embarrassment to the Obama administration if it had come out that we had allowed infiltration of a helicopter carrying SEAL Team 6. First of all, our guys shouldn't have been flying with these A&A guys, Afghan National Army guys anyway. It slowed them down. We had testimony from SEALs and Rangers saying they didn't want to fly with these guys.
Well, they weren't sure if these guys were going to shoot them in the back. And Aaron Vaughn told Billy Vaughn, who said it on one of my presentations, that Aaron said that when they would get there, the guys sometimes wouldn't fight because they knew who they were shooting at on the other side.
I mean, all that, right. They're worthless, totally worthless. And you see when Biden, the way he pulls out of Afghanistan, how the Afghan National Army folded like a wet rag within about 48 hours the U.S. pulling out. That's how worthless they are militarily.
Well, and they gave it all over to the, and they gave it all over to the Taliban.
$7 billion. I mean, I heard you quoting General Valley earlier, an earlier segment. I've spent some time with the general, and he's correct. But, you know, $7 billion, and this goes even beyond woke. This goes to treason, if you ask me. You take $7 billion military, turn it over to enemy. Now, think about what that does to morale of the troops.
Absolutely.
I just saw the Army and Navy with reduced recruiting goals still cannot meet their recruiting goals. When you look at the woke assault against the military, standing down for 60 days, calling them racist. When you look at General Milley trying to understand white rage. I mean, come on, man. You have Secretary Woke Austin talking about he's going to protect abortion. They've got their minds on everything other than military preparedness and military readiness, and it's killing morale. And this shootdown was a tremendous blow to the morale of the United States military. I spoke with a Green Beret general whose name I'm not at liberty to say just a couple weeks ago, who was talking about the morale, the destruction of the military morale that surrounded the shootdown of this chopper. Something happened. There are people on the inside that know. There are people that won't say because they're afraid to say. And we do have to get to the bottom of it. We've got to expose the light of truth to it so that it doesn't happen again.
Absolutely. Logan, let's go to the clip of a WVW Broadcast Network production a couple years ago by our friends Karen and Billy Vaughn, their son is Aaron Vaughn, the parents of Aaron Vaughn, one of the 17 brave Navy SEALs that lost his life that day. They were in our studio here and for their show, and we produced several shows for them. I want you to watch this. About this again is while President Trump is in office and there's just the talk of Biden running for office. Watch what the Vaughns had to say.
WVW Broadcast Network is pleased to present In the Arena with Gold Star parents Billy and Karen Vaughn. Billy and Karen Vaughn are the parents of fallen Navy SEAL Aaron Vaughn, who is part of SEAL Team 6. On August 6th, 2011, Aaron was killed in action in the Tangi River Valley of Afghanistan when a chopper called Extortion 17 carrying 30 Americans was shot down from the sky. The day Aaron's life ended, theirs began again. The Vaughns have emerged on the national scene as powerful spokespersons for not only our defenders still fighting on foreign soil, but also for the freedoms and prosperity here at home so many have sacrificed their lives to protect. Through the lens of hope and grave personal loss, their message is inspired by the firm belief that a representative republic is the noblest form of government ever devised by man and therefore demands protection. And now, here are your hosts, Billy and Karen Vaughn.
Recall what had just happened. What had just happened 93 days before the shootdown of Extortion 17? Vice President Joe Biden, who, by the way, says he's the most qualified man to be president in 2020. I want you to remember that. He committed a breach of security that should have been treason against the Navy SEALs when he outed the Navy SEALs for the bin Laden raid. And if you think that's just my words, just the words of a father, no, it sent a fear through the special ops community, through the SEALs, through the Marines, recon, all of them, because they'd been outed. And they were afraid for themselves, and they were more afraid for them, for their families.
Aaron actually called me.
That's right.
Aaron actually called me the next day and said, Mom, you need to wipe your social media clean. You need to get everything off of it that has anything to do with me or my buddies. And his tone was astoundingly, not fearful is not the word I would use for him, but concerned, grave. And I said, of course, son, I will, but what's going on? He said, Mom, there's chatter, and your life is in danger. Our families' lives are in danger because of what Joe Biden had done. And this was unprecedented. Once again, I have to say unprecedented. If you or I had done what he did by announcing that it was the Navy SEALs that took out bin Laden, where everybody who has a brain the size of a pea knows that now there would be retribution, this was massive. This was a massive get. And now there was going to be retribution on the people that were responsible for it. This man has followers across the globe. And so the Navy SEALs knew that, and they all began...
What
man? Bin Laden. And so they began upping the security on their homes. They were fearful for their wives, for their children, for their parents, not for themselves. But listen, the injustices, this is just... We could spend a year telling you the stories of what happened, but I also want to tell you this. Just getting back to our military and the unbelievably horrible
way.
Wait.
We need to go one step further with that. Because you're not here again. You're not taking our word for this. You look it up. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates came out after Biden, after the Obama administration outed the Navy SEALs, and stated on TV, we had agreed in an interview. He stated we had agreed the details of the operation would never come out. But that all fell apart on Monday morning. That all fell apart when Joe Biden committed that security breach. And folks, it's just runs roughshod over Americans, over American citizens. He's never been held accountable for it. Passed right on. The news media gave him a pass.
Passed on as an Uncle Joe gaffe.
Exactly.
You know, no, not
but,
a gaffe.
But on August 6, 2011, the greatest loss in the history of naval special warfare as SEAL Team 6 is taken out. And by the way, in just a few days, the Taliban began to put out in the Middle East that SEAL Team 6, we're going to do whatever it takes to take down SEAL Team 6. SEAL Team 6 put a target on SEAL Team 6's back.
Not only theirs, but everybody that worked with
them. And everybody that worked with them is just what happened on the chopper. People who supported them were killed that night. And on May the 10th, in the redacted file that Karen and I have, on May the 10th, United States intelligence reported that a massive buildup of Taliban and heavy weapons moving into the Tang River Valley with the express intention of taking down a NATO helicopter. And by the way, our military, our administration did nothing to change the way they were operating, to have the backs of these men as they tried to go out in the middle of the night and do their job and kill a savage enemy.
All right. You want to comment?
First off, thanks for giving Billy and Karen that time. They're some of the greatest people I know. Talk about brave. You asked me if I'm afraid. I'm not going to be afraid because of them. But Billy is correct. Biden... Secretary Gates did forge an agreement amongst the highest levels of the Obama administration to keep everybody keep quiet. Biden ran his mouth very publicly on May the 3rd. What Bill is referring to on the 10th, U.S. intelligence, and we had an Air Force intelligence officer testify to the Colt report to the Colt committee in Afghanistan, that we received reports of 100 additional Taliban fighters moving this very small valley with RPGs solely for the purpose of taking out the U.S. Special Forces chopper. Now, here's the thing. The thing you would add to that is between the Bin Laden mission, which was May 1st, 2011, and the shoot down of extortion, August 6, 2011, about 96 days, as Billy said, there were three attempted shoot downs of U.S. military choppers during that time frame before they finally took down extortion on August 6th. And here's the thing. The rules of engagement set by Obama prohibited what we call pre-suppression fire. In other words, we could not take out the Taliban on the ground or pre-suppression fire. They were free just to fire all they wanted, fire away all they wanted. If you look at basic U.S. military doctrine going back before World War II, if you go back to Normandy, the Navy shell, the you-know-what, out of the beaches in Normandy. You go to February of 45, Iwo Jima, the Navy shelled the beaches of Iwo Jima. Pre-suppression fire is something where we put down fire to try to clear an area so that we put our troops in, they'll be safe. But pre-suppression fire was absolutely prohibited on this night of August 11th, even though there had been three attempted shootdowns in that interim. Unsuccessful, fortunately, one of the choppers had been hit. One had been missed. One had a very close call. They got extortion. But had you been able to put pre-suppression fire down the landing zone, assuming the shot came to the ground, you could have taken the Taliban out long before you put our guys down. But that was denied. Matter of fact, one of the Apache pilots who was testifying and on the record that during the investigation after the shootdown said, we could not get pre-suppression fire. We never could get it. We tried to get it. One of the Apache pilots, immediately after the shootdown, on his own, started firing into the landing zone, just as a matter of instinct. The chopper had gone down, blew up. Oh, my God, he said. And he started firing into the landing zone. And on the video, you can see the bullets from our Apache helicopter, bam, 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 hitting the ground near the shootdown because he's trying to take out the shooter. That Apache chopper pilot was raked over the coals by General Colt for firing after the shootdown, okay? So we weren't giving our guys protection to protect themselves where they landed.
So General Colt, is he a coward? Is he a traitor? Is he blackmailed? Is he a pervert? And they got videos of him? I'm just asking questions because he sounds like a total piece of human trash to me.
It was very, and by the way, General Jim Mattis signed off on this report.
Mad Dog Mattis.
Mad Dog ordered Colt to go and investigate and to close it fast. And this investigation was closed in about less than 6 weeks. So it was a predetermined, done job before it started, with a predetermined objective, in my opinion, to find no fault from anybody in the U.S. military and to call it.
What do these families think of these? What do these families think of General Colt, these people that you're telling me about? What do they think of them?
Well, I can't speak for all the families. I know the Vaughns are not particularly fond of him. I know Charlie Strange is not particularly fond of him. I know the Hamburgers are not particularly fond of him, and others as well. But it's very, very clear when Colt's up there, they're asking these families going back to October of 2011, when they were brought in just weeks after the shootdown, for Colt to brief them. That's when Colt first started. Some of the families said, what about Black Box? Because they had the acumen, the asset. And that's when Colt says, washed away in a flood. Now, why he was doing that, again, you go back to the point. We have people inside the military, and the government want the truth out. Senior enlisted guys are handing out these envelopes, which have on the desk 1,250 pages from the report. But so he was shooting my line even then. But it's very clear Colt, and I fully believe that Colt's marching orders from Mattis, go and investigate and to buckle it down without raising any questions. Matter of fact, in my opinion, they tried to raise a red flag issue to take our opinion off the real issue. And that red flag issue was this. They were saying, you know, despite the fact these were Army National Guard choppers. These were not the choppers that the SEALs typically fly on from the 160th Special Operations Air Regiment in Fort Benning, SOAR. We have special ops choppers in the Army that carry SEALs and Rangers. This SEAL team was carried on an old Vietnam-era Chinook, CH-47, piloted by an Army National Guard crew. I believe you said you met one of the family members. So anyway, I have no reason at all to question the competency of the Army air crew. I have no reason to believe they couldn't put that chopper down where it needed to be. David Carter, the senior pilot, he wasn't a pilot in command, but had been flying for 20-some years. Sometimes Brandon, our reserve pilots, are better than our active pilots. They've been flying a lot longer. But the official report raised the issue of the competency of the pilots.
Oh, wow, that's nice. Ridiculous. That's nice. Blame the dead guys, right? Blame the dead guys.
And the purpose was to get the SEAL families arguing about the – and they're trying to point – to do this, to take our attention off the fact that some unidentified unit came in and took the black box, take our attention off the fact that they were giving us a bunch of BS about you know, why they couldn't find a black box, take our attention off the fact that we flew Taliban or we flew Afghans into Dover Air Base, you know, and don't know what happened to their bodies, to take attention off the fact that some military pathologists – took bullets out of the bodies and threw them away. They didn't want us focused on any of this, so they very cleverly create this little, in my opinion, this little non-argument type of argument within the military report itself to get people's minds off the bullseye. But they're not going to. It's not going to work.
So quick answers, quick questions. I got one more guest to get to. I'm going to have to move my interview with Carrie Madej to tomorrow night. I pre-taped it this afternoon, guys. So my exclusive interview with Dr. Carrie Madej, I'll have to move it till tomorrow night because I got to get to Karen Kingston with breaking news. So quick question, quick answer. So why did they put these guys on such a slow helicopter with so many Americans? It sounds like that made them an easier target.
It did, and we don't have a credible answer to that either. We know that these two choppers, Extortion 17, which was shot down, his sister chopper, Extortion 16, about 4 hours earlier, had flown a mission where they put these Army Rangers on the ground that were involved in the firefight. Extortion 17 had half the Ranger group, 16 had half the Ranger group, so they split them up. For whatever reason, 16 took off along with 17 right before the shootdown. 16 was empty, except for the flight crew. 17 was jam-packed like a bunch of sardines with SEALs in there. We don't have a credible answer to that question.
So what you're saying is they could have taken some and put them onto 16 and had them split.
Which is normally what they would have done. Yes, okay. Exactly. Which is what they had done with the Ranger team earlier.
So
we don't know.
So if you have the CIA overseeing, as you've told us tonight, the SEALs for some time, and we think about Afghanistan, any of us that have been doing this a while, when we think Afghanistan and we think about the CIA, we think about drug running and drugs.
Yeah, I've heard that.
So my question is, Was there anything, or have you heard of anything that maybe this team full of people was gonna go, were going to go and do as the real mission that might have upset the CIA that they didn't want to do, have done?
We don't have enough evidence for sure for me to go on a record and comment on that.
Do you know what I'm hinting at? Do you know what I'm hinting at?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Do we have anyone else with knowledge of the team and knowledge of some of the people on that plane, and have any of these people been threatened by our government?
We believe that there have been threats. I don't have direct evidence of that. But the reason I say that is because when certain members of the SEAL community are questioned about it, they go cold, they go clammy. You talk about fear. There's visible fear on their faces. And I can tell you this. Captain Johnny Marquez, who stepped forward and appeared in the movie, the firing officer on the AC-130, was threatened if she talked. She has told us that. And she came forward anyway. God bless her.
How do they threaten? What are they threatening him with? Jail time? What are they threatening him with?
You better not talk. You're ordered not to talk. And if when you're in active duty, if you disobey a lawful command, of course, then yes, there could be jail time for that. I don't know that they actually said jail time or whatever, but she was ordered to not talk. She was threatened not to talk. She told us also that the entire AC-130 gun crew was pulled off the plane, and within the next day or so, they were brought in and ordered to say nothing. So there were orders. There had been, if they're going to order the gun crew to say nothing, you know that there are going to be orders to other groups to say nothing as well. So I'm basing my answer based on what Johnny has told us, Captain Marquez has told us. I'm basing my answer on knowing the reaction of members of the SEAL community, how they react. It's like, you know, we're having a great conversation, you and I. Brandon, we're having a great conversation. I asked the wrong question, or you asked the wrong question to me, and I turned into an immediate iceberg. I can't talk. I mean, you can see the visible fear on the faces of certain of our greatest warriors, and it's very, very clear that someone has told them something. I cannot say for sure, but I can tell you what Captain Marquez told us. That flight crew was threatened not to say anything. They were ordered not to say anything and threatened. And my guess is that it goes far and much deeper beyond that.
Was the CIA was the CIA involved in growing poppy and drugs over there?
I'm not trying to dodge that question. I just don't have enough information to answer that. But I can tell you this. I can tell you that it's pretty clear that the opium production in Afghanistan increased tremendously during our 20-some years there.
You can see that from the air. If you go and look at shots before the war and you look at shots while we're over there, you see more poppy fields, I'm told, than when we're over there and controlling it than we did before we got there.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you're aware of this. I represented Lieutenant Clint Lawrence, who President Trump pardoned in 2019. Clint was prosecuted for quote-unquote murder based upon a firefight that broke out in Kandahar province in 2012. But I've talked to Clint extensively. He's told me all about poppy seeds, the poppy fields, poppy this, poppy that. The whole region was brimming with it. We had the power to end that if we wanted to. Now, I can't tell you, you know, what CIA may have had to do with or not do with it, but I can tell you we had the military power to have ended that if we wanted to end it. And I can tell you also that one of the frustrations that the guys felt is the Taliban's growing, you know, they're growing opium, and then they're selling the opium to make money to get about IDs to kill Americans.
Yep. So let me ask you, in closing, are we ever going to get to the bottom of this?
Yes. I believe the truth is going to prevail one way or the other. I can't tell you exactly how, but I believe that we will. We know more today than we knew yesterday.
So if someone is watching this interview tonight, and this, of course, will go up on multiple platforms and be seen by untold numbers, despite the fact we're live, we have a big audience, it'll go for a long way after this on many platforms. If someone's watching tonight, they go to your website. What is that website? DonBrownBooks.com?
Mm-hmm. DonBrownBooks.com. I've got a great memory. Well, you can email me at DonBrownBooks@gmail.com if anybody...
Give that again. So if they're a whistleblower or have information and you'll protect their confidentiality, if they want to contact you and discuss things with you in a secure way. They can reach out to you. What's that email again?
DonBrownBooks@gmail.com.
DonBrownBooks@gmail.com. And we're encouraging all patriots and whistleblowers, reach out, work with him in a way that you can communicate in a secure fashion, and he'll protect your identity, right?
Speak out, yes. Speak out for the sake of the 30 Americans that gave their lives.
You know, right.
Speak out for them and for their memories and protect others in the future.
Any updates
this
you
can't Sam.
Any updates you have on this or any other story that you think is of interest, I want you to reach out to me, all right?
You bet, brother. Listen, I appreciate what you're doing. And glad Terry's okay.
You too. Thank you. DonBrownBooks.com, folks. DonBrownBooks.com. I went over because that's so important. So the interview I recorded this afternoon with Dr. Kerry Madej is 25 minutes. So I'd have to start it right now just to finish. But I got breaking news with Karen Kingston. Problem is I have too many good guests with too many breaking news stories, I guess. But we will get you that interview tomorrow night with Kerry Madej that I pre-taped this afternoon.
Hello, I'm Brandon House, and I cannot stress enough how important it is that you go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code WVW as in Worldview Weekend. Not only will you save up to 66% on sheets, towels, blankets, dog beds, pet beds, bathrobes, slippers, moccasins, and any of the 110-plus products, not only will you save up to 66% on your purchase by using the very powerful promo code WVW, but did you know that with each purchase, a generous portion comes back to WVW Broadcast Network? Last year in 2021, we were able to replace all of our 12-year-old plus cameras. They were at least 12 years old. They were old HD cameras. We were able to get brand new 4K cameras because you used the promo code WVW. That's how important it is. You may think, well, is it really that important? Yeah, it is. We wouldn't have, I don't think, the brand new cameras we have today if we had not had your support by going to MyPillow.com and using the promo code WVW. Now, not only do we have to buy new equipment, maintain the equipment, but we have bandwidth bill. Every month, we pay thousands of dollars in storage and bandwidth so that you can watch the free TV shows at WVW. If you listen to the radio show for free, I have to pay for the bandwidth. The radio shows and TV shows are free for you to watch, but I have to pay for the bandwidth. How do we cover that bill? One way is by those of you that go to MyPillow.com and you use the promo code WVW, as in Worldview Weekend, WVW. Will you do that right now? Will you do me another favor? Will you ask your family and friends to go to MyPillow.com? Look, we all need sheets, towels, blankets, comforters, dog beds, bathrobes, slippers, moccasins. You're not only supporting a great company and the work of Mike Lindell, you're also supporting the free radio and TV shows at WVW Broadcast Network. I really need you to go there right now. Please, don't delay. Go right now to MyPillow.com and use the promo code WVW. This is a great way for you to support our work and get something in return. Please do it right now. MyPillow.com and use the promo code WVW. Thank you.
Joining me now is Karen Kingston. Karen, welcome to the broadcast. Wow, were you listening to that, Karen?
I was, yeah. No surprise.
Pretty amazing, huh?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's obvious that we've been in a war for a long time, and our intelligence community, Pentagon, military have been conspiring with, the deep state. So, actually, two things before I go to our topic is, I don't know if you saw the Gateway Pundit put out a article today saying that children 2 to 3 years of age are now suffering from seizures that have been vaccinated. And, you know, we covered that on your show last week or 2 weeks ago, where it states clearly in the phase three data, more than a half dozen, I think about 12 children suffered from not just seizures, but permanent brain injury. So regardless of that coverage, parents are still moving forward with injecting their children with this bioweapon. And then Uruguay is suing BioNTech to release the ingredients, including graphene oxide and lipid nanoparticles, in the next 48 hours. So that's good news. But one thing I want to talk about is the way that this has been so successful, and all attacks on America have been so successful, is if you read any of the documents, whether it's the Nuclear Threat Initiative, whether it's the World Economic Forum, whether it's our own cybersecurity division, the one thing that everyone agrees upon is that they cannot agree upon who's responsible. for these crimes against humanity. So if our U.S. financial system collapsed overnight, you will find cybersecurity experts saying it's impossible to identify who hacked the financial system. You will find from NTI, if there's a monkeypox outbreak, it's impossible to determine where that virus came from. When Wuhan, the Wuhan virus came out of Wuhan in collaboration with working with the U.S. military, it was predetermined that it's impossible to determine, you know, where this came from. So the lack of attribution, which means whodunit, is key to the success of the deep state. So I'm about to start naming names. And when I told people I was going to do this, I got news articles on Brandi Vaughan. So you're looking at a dead woman walking. I've already been hit. I want to go on record about that. Going to see my fourth doctor tomorrow. Currently,
so you,
I have.
So are you telling me
that are coming out through my skin? It's very painful.
Whoa, wait. You broke up. What was it? What did you just say?
I've already been hit. I'll explain to you with this nanotechnology. I've been hit. I'm going to see my fourth doctor tomorrow. So the last 2 months, I've been going through a series of treatments. I literally have metal coming out through my body. There's a doctor that has all of my images and stuff, pictures of my medical records, because I want to go on record that this happened.
So you have had a. Are you telling me you believe you've had a bio attack against you because of all you've been revealing?
I know I have. I have images of the nanotechnology coming out of my body. I've got spike protein in certain areas. Praise God, my brain was not hit.
When do you think this happened?
I don't want to go into all the details, but it started last year.
And how do you think? How do you think you get hit? How does someone get hit? How do you think this happens?
So what happened with me, I believe, was this last round, because it was so severe, was that someone probably at an event offered to pray with me, and they can do a transdermal weapon. So it's called a tick. So they just put it on your skin and you're injected with the nanotech.
So they're like, let me pray for you. And they lay their hands on you, and they've got some patch, the patch that the skin, what's touching them is fine. It's like the double stick tape. It's the side that's going to touch you that's the problem.
Yeah, this technology, I mean, Bill Gates funded it, right? It uses like 1,000 viper fangs to inoculate you.
All right, so we're going to ask our audience, obviously, to pray for you. Keep us posted. We know you've been sick. I know you really didn't even want to come on tonight's show, and I kind of pushed you.
Yeah, so let's just go to the so James Giordano is who we're going to talk about.
Yep,
so just
go
to the slide real quick, and then we'll go to the video.
Okay.
I want you to hear his mouth from his mouth. So he is a professor of neuroethics. That's an oxymoron at Georgetown University in brain and biosciences. He works closely with our military. I'm going to show you the tape where he says he works with the intelligence community and the military, and he'll explain. Yeah, you can go on the next slide.
Does Logan have that?
Have what?
The video. Do you have a video you want to play too, you said?
Yeah, there should be a link in the same link that has the slides in it.
Okay.
Do you want me to drop it to him right now?
Yeah, no, I can click it. You want to just click on something? Which one?
Yeah. Well, just real quick, I want to go on record for a couple of things too. So MIT published this article in February of 2016, and they released a document where James Clapper, the former National Security Advisor, I believe under the Clinton administration, said that gene editing technology, you know, so this is mRNA technology, is a bioweapon and should be classified as such. Specifically in this article, they talk about CRISPR-Cas9. At the University of Pittsburgh, the scientists said, what we love about the mRNA vaccines is it's CRISPR-Cas9 in an injection. So if you go on to the next slide, the reason why James Clapper said that this should be considered a bioweapon is because of the dual use of technology. So you can have private actors using to weaponize it, you know, while allegedly our government was using it to research, you know, it's a bioweapon, but whatever, I guess, to figure out how to inhibit attacks. It's really important to note that it could be used, CRISPR-Cas9, to create killer mosquitoes. Another thing from the Gateway Pundit today is, oh, there's an increase in rare, you know, viruses now that are being spread by mosquitoes across the globe. I wonder why. This is being made by our Pentagon or intelligence
community. Something that we reported on months ago here.
Again. They also talk about in this article, again, this is insider Pentagon papers, that biotechnology, more than any domain, has greater potential for human good, but also has a possibility to be misused. They're worried about people developing some sort of pathogen, SARS-CoV-2 or other pathogen, with robust capabilities, but we're concerned about the chance of misutilization. We could have an accident occur where gene editing that is catastrophic, since the genome is the very essence of life. So he's saying, look, you're playing God, and this could result in more destruction to humanity than a nuclear threat, which it has. So now let's just go to the videotapes of James Giordano. As I said, he is a professor of neuroethics at Georgetown University. If the first clip is at 1440, where he states he works with the intelligence community in Pentagon, I just want to tee that up.
Okay, and so where do I get these clips? Did you send them to me?
It's in the email I sent with the slides. It's right
okay.
there.
Okay, it's in the email you sent with the slides. All right, yeah. Then I'll have it right here. Hang on. Okay, at what point do you want to click the 1440 mark?
Go to the 1440 mark.
Okay. Are you guys going to have the audio of me, or do I just need to send this to you, Logan?
Send it to Logan.
Yeah, I'm just going to forward this to you, Logan, because I'm not plugged in with audio tonight. Let's see, Logan. What's your last name, Logan? All right, I got it. All right, so Logan's got that. Let me know when you're ready with that, Logan. And
so go to the 1440 to 1526.
Okay, and the timestamps are in that email, Logan.
Yeah. Then skip the 3059, because I can just, and then go to 1440 to 1526, and then 3548.
Okay, so starting at 1440, let me know when you're ready. Yeah. Okay, almost there.
Yeah, so James Giordano, he has 38 years experience in neuroscience. He began working with Obama in 2008 to create neural weapons. He talks about not just the use of gene editing technologies and nanotech to hijack leaders and individuals. Mm-hmm. He talks about also strategic warfare. So how you can have an actor, which could be a political leader or a military leader, they can use nanotechnology, put it on the rim of a glass. That nanotechnology is programmed to hijack their brain, and then that they can actually work to actually create mood swings in that individual, to make that individual more passive or more aggressive towards our ideas, to make a person actually look insane so that a community loses a leader. He also talks about, President Lincoln famously quoting the Buddha, saying, making my enemy my friend, right, is better than having an enemy, right, and having a happy or compliant battlefield. So he talks about the use of putting in influential leaders in certain communities to make individuals or nations more amenable, more open to the idea of what they want to accomplish, to avoid confrontation. These individuals are cowards. They have no integrity. They have no honor. They are lying to the American people and global population to manipulate them, to trust them, and then they're harming them, and they're lying about it the whole time. Not want to be named.
Yeah, we got the clip. Here we go.
Okay, let's go.
It's neuromarketing. Understanding how brains work to do the things that minds do then allows us to better understand how to affect psychological interactions with various groups of people so as to be able to engage certain brain reactions that affect their bodily behaviors. That's a nice way of saying I can affect minds to affect hearts. Yes, the neuromarketing community has done a wonderful job in that, but that has not gone beyond the pale of understanding how neuroscience and technology and the information we know about brains and what they do may also be of key value to the intelligence area, as well as psychological operations. Some of the ongoing work we've been doing with the Strategic Multi-Level Assessment Group at Pentagon has focused upon this exclusively over the past 8 years in a series of white papers, and I'll provide those references to you at the end of this lecture, and certainly they're available to you in the note pack.
Okay, so Logan can go to 1348, but he just stated he works with the intelligence community and the Pentagon to control minds using neuroweapons, as well as to actually execute psyops using media and social media. Okay. I have his paper on that as well. Is this shocking to anybody? His name is James Giordano.
Wow.
This is confessing to a psyop.
Yeah. Next one, Logan. 1348. Yep.
3548. And pause at 3612 and then start it up again. But pause, because Brandon, I want your response to what he says in between 3548 and 3612.
Okay.
I'm interviewing you now.
Could spin, yes, absolutely. Moreover, you heard earlier about the idea of nanoparticulate matter that can be utilized in a weaponizable way. And here, too, we're looking very, very strongly at what nanoparticulate matter can do to the nervous system. Some ongoing studies with our colleagues in the medical branches of NATO have in fact shown that the use of nanoparticulate matter in a scatter arrangement can be used to incur what looks to be broad-scale epidemiological stroke epidemics. So what we're able to do here is infiltrate...
You mean like all the people that are healthy dying in their sleep?
The strokes, the blood clotting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's just play another minute. And he says nanoparticulate. He can create a nano cloud. There's a speech of him talking to the Modern War Institute of West Point, where he explains how he can create a nanoparticle cloud to inoculate people with nanotechnology and bioweapons. But keep going. But so this is the strokes, is the nanotechnology is causing the blood clotting and strokes. Strokes aren't an epidemic. They're not contagious. This has always been an attack. What happened in China? There are 32,000 people hospitalized in Hong Kong. Not one case of human-to-human transmission. Wuhan, not one case of human-to-human transmission. I bet in Italy, not one case of human-to-human transmission. This was an aerosolized attack. He just explained it to it. And the primary result is blood clots, heart attacks, and strokes.
Create nanotech cloud.
Yeah, to create epidemic strokes.
And by cloud, is that what he means? Like a aerosol, you think?
It's the aerosolized. That's what we talked about. Yeah, it's aerosolized.
And you and I have talked about this for how many months, this idea of aerosol, making this in an aerosol, right?
Since last summer.
Yeah, since last summer, a year, just a year. Okay, next clip at what? Next clip at what, 3107? 3701, I mean?
Yeah, next one stop at 3701.
All right, keep going, Logan. Yep, just keep going. Yes, keep going where you're at. Yep.
The brain space with nanoparticulate matter that aggregates in situ, on site in the brain, and does one of two things. Either penetrates from the vascular space, gets in through the bloodstream, gets in through the nose, through the mucosa, or infiltrates the vascular space and clogs it. What is the result? What's called a nanoparticulate stroke or a hemorrhagic diathesis, fancy word, for it's a predisposition to individuals having brain bleeds. Demonstrated? Oh, absolutely. We're able to show animal models of same, and the Italian group has done a fair amount of work demonstrating that nanoparticulate matter can be highly disruptive, not only of brain vascularity, but brain function. You may not necessarily incur a stroke, but you're going to begin to disrupt the network properties of the brain, and as a result, engage something more of a long wars effect through the use of these types of matters, where you now begin to influence the population in increasingly concentric circles of expansion.
Okay. So who is he speaking to again?
He's speaking at Georgetown University, I believe, to the ROTC students there.
And remind our audience who he is.
He's the professor of neuroethics at Georgetown University and advisor to the intelligence community and Pentagon, as he just said himself at the beginning of the video.
And let's not forget how many years I've been telling this audience and on my radio show and my other TV shows, Georgetown University is a Jesuit university. Their logo is an eagle with the world in one talent, the cross in the other, of the two, one. They are a Jesuit. Where did the CIA learn their deal? History seems to show us the CIA learned what they do and how they do it through watching the Jesuits. What did Hitler say? He wanted to model like the Jesuits. What did Cecil Rhodes, who created Rhodes Scholarship for World Government, say? Model like the Jesuits. And where did Malachi Martin, the Jesuit who left and began to write books exposing this? Many of them we've talked about. What did he say was going to happen? That they would put in liberal communist priest who eventually would elect a communist Marxist pope, and the Jesuit popes, and the Jesuit pope, and the Jesuits, and the Marxists, and the Masons. He said, this is who's going to take down the globe for world order. A former Jesuit, Malachi Martin. Where's this guy at? Jesuit University, George Washington University. And he counsels the Pentagon, which I think today is controlled by the CIA.
But he's also a self-proclaimed Jesuit.
What?
Mm-hmm. So, but what's important about what he said is we know the inoculations can cause, the bioweapon injections can cause stroke. What you're going to start see happening, I've had many strokes. You're going to see happening is there's going to be aerosol spray down so that they want other people, young, healthy people such as myself, to suffer from strokes and heart attacks and children so they can say, look, it's happening in the unvaccinated as well.
Now, I have not revealed this on the air, but since you're doing it, I'm going to. I don't know that I've had many strokes, but a doctor that I consulted with told me that when I got COVID the first time, so severe, sicker than my wife has ever seen us in our 30-year marriage at the time, I couldn't remember people I had met 2 days earlier and talked to for 15 minutes. I could remember stuff to come on the air. I could come on the air, talk about all the old history and everything, no problem. Meet someone 2 days later, I wouldn't remember having met them. I couldn't remember. My family thought I was beginning to have the signs of Alzheimer's, a dementia, at 51 years old or whenever that was in 2020 that I got so sick. Now, my doctor I consulted with said, and I have not, quote, been to the doctor, but I consulted personally with a doctor who has seen many such patients. And so I went to dinner with him and I consulted with him and he said, these are all the symptoms I've seen of many bleeds, many brain bleeds in COVID patients who got it very severely. He said, don't worry, it will heal over time. And it did. So it didn't bother me for radio TV because I'm dealing with my topic that's old school. I know what I'm talking about. It's the simple things, who I'm meeting someone, forgetting. I mean, they didn't seem like simple things at the time. Then I got so sick. The second time I had it earlier this year, I got, and this it's on video, Logan has it, that when we were filming one day, I could not complete sentences. And I could not get words right. And it was, he was afraid I was having a stroke. And it's all on video. It took time over the course of several weeks. It repaired it. And thankfully, it didn't happen on the air. But he has the video of it happening where I'm literally trying to read something that was put in front of me in a teleprompter. And I could not finish the sentence. I could not even use the correct word when trying to ask him a question. And you would swear I'm having a stroke. But it like I said, over the course of a few weeks, it finally passed. But I never had such an episode. But my family has seen it, and they actually have one of them on video. So I can concur with the idea of the little brain bleeds. Now, I have not had the COVID shot, but I'm also –
I have not had the shot at all, not by volition, not by my own choice. Yeah.
But you could have the COVID, and the spike proteins in the COVID could still cause this reaction. To me, for what what I'm explaining.
The nanotech could have been put on a glass of yours or something too. Right? The fomite transmission could have been put on a package. This needs to be shut down. Let's go back to the video because I know we're running out of time and I think people want to see what James Giordano has to say.
All right.
Just continue playing the video till we run out of time, I guess.
All right, go to the next one if you don't mind, Logan.
Moreover, you heard earlier, and I'm not going to beleaguer the point of the idea of neurosensory devices and a whole host of trans and intracranial pulse stimulators. And of course, these can be used for a variety of things with key individuals. Once again, particularly when it comes to trans and intracranial devices, I'm not looking for this to be weapons of mass use. I'm looking to target key individuals who may then be influential to relative aspects of their representative groups. I can affect individuals' brain functions in a variety of different ways, both positively and negatively, by engaging or disengaging nodes and networks of the brain that therefore affect their cognitions, emotions, and ultimately their behaviors. Moreover, by understanding the way the brain works as nodes and networks and not as key sites that are doing any particular thing, I can also utilize various forms of electromagnetic radiation and energy to be able to disrupt brain function. The brain is an electromagnetic organ, and like any other electromagnetic substance, the integrity of those networks is reliant upon the electromagnetic pulses that flow in between them. Utilizing electromagnetic sensory and disruptive devices in this way, with ever greater fidelity and with ever greater granularity, can be used as not only an organ against individuals, but against groups. And in fact, this is some of the work that we've seen that has been conducted previously in what was the Soviet Union, now Russia, and also China is looking very, very deeply into what electromagnetic pulse generation can do to the brain with regard to treating diseases and also incurring certain disease states in individuals who may then be susceptible, who may be exposed to such pulses.
Can I stop right there for 1 second? Let me stop right there. Electromagnetic field induced mental illness, thoughts, and ideas. I'm just off the cuff. Correct me if I'm wrong. 5G come into play, add this to this, and make people kind of woo.
Yeah, it can make people bipolar. It can make them severely depressed, suicidal. It can make them manic. It can induce anger. So what he said is the brain is already an electromagnetic field. By adding nanotechnology, you know, aerosolized or injected into the body, it's targeted to the brain, and then that can enhance the receptivity.
Did we get to 3330 where he, to 3330 Logan, yeah, to 3602 can take a benign bug using gene editing technology, cause pathogen neurological effects, cardiovascular disease, blood clots? I can take ownership and tell the public population to be very afraid.
That's in the next video. That's the link at the bottom. So I just kind of messed. So you have to go to the next video.
Go to the next link.
At the bottom.
He says by the time we get it downloaded, we'll be out of time. Let me do this. Let me have you back on tomorrow night if you think you can do it.
Yeah, I can.
I can have Dan Cox on, who's ran for governor, I think, in Maryland at 7:30. We'll have Carrie Madej recording next, then you to the end of the show. Tomorrow night, part two.
Yeah, and I have his studies too, so James Giordano's studies. But, you know, pray for America.
Absolutely, and pray for Karen.
And people need to be held to account. I don't, enough with this, you know, we can't blame people, we can't point fingers.
Absolutely. Well, I just wrote all that down, so that's our schedule tomorrow night. Thank you, Karen. My fight, go to KarenKingston.net, KarenKingston.net, and you can support it through GiveSendGo.com/myfight.
Folks, no, it's Slash Kingston now.
Well, yeah, sorry. Slash all right, and Kingston. Folks, notice tonight we've not really stopped to promote anything, but we need your support. That's all I can tell you. Please, WVWFoundation.com is my website. WVWFoundation.com to make a contribution. MyPillow.com, use promo code B66. We need your support. Take care.
Hello, I'm Brandon House. Have you watched Worldview Report? That is our new nightly Worldview broadcast. It's a 30-minute nightly television broadcast. It takes about 7 of us 15 man hours a day to put this all together. You'll see what I mean and how quality it is when you watch it for free at WVWTV.com. That's our 30-minute new nightly news report. But you know what else we're doing? We're taking this and putting it at worldviewradio.com each day as an MP3. For those of you that want to just listen to it while you walk the dog, work in the kitchen, drive in the car, work out. So we're putting it up not only as a TV show, but as an MP3 as well at worldviewradio.com. We're also now taking my 90-minute live television show that airs Monday through Friday, Brandon House Live, and we're now posting that also as a free MP3 at worldviewradio.com. So you can listen to Worldview Radio, my daily radio show, as you have for years at worldviewradio.com. You can listen to my 30-minute nightly news broadcast as now an MP3 at worldviewradio.com. And you can listen to my 90-minute live television show now as an MP3 at worldviewradio.com. Now, not only are these all at worldviewradio.com, you can also watch them as a TV show at WVWTV.com. Now, here's the deal. Did you know we spend thousands of dollars a month in bandwidth, paying for the bandwidth for people to watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows for free? Not only that, do you know what it costs to keep a staff going that helps me with all this? Did you know that we also have a utility bill that is like $1,500 to $1,700, close to $2,000 a month? Because even in the Mid-South, pretty much have to keep the air conditioning going year-round or the servers could overheat. And we also are pulling a lot of electricity with our TV studio. So think about our utility bill, our insurance, the people we hire and have to pay to keep working on our team, the bandwidth we pay for, our broadband high-speed internet. You cannot believe the thousands and thousands of dollars it takes to do the television and radio programs we're doing at the quality we're doing them. Please go right now to WVWFoundation.com and make a contribution. WVWFoundation.com. You can also use our mailing address, P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee, 38027. That's again, WVW Foundation, P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee, 38027. Thank you so much for your support.